fire, Lord judgment. My own sweet time didn't teach what I found. Only recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated.
What's up, everyone? How you doing? Welcome back to another episode of the show, of my podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome, a show where I, your host, Shane Told, talks to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a band. We got a good one this week. Marcus Bridge of North Lane, Australia's finest, joins me on the program. This one gets a little heavy. This one gets a little deep. It's a good episode. It's coming right up along with some new North Lane music. They got a new record coming out in August. I'm going to play a song for you a little later. It's just awesome. Really just awesome. I'm sitting in the backyard right now. Finally, we have a half-decent day. Brutal spring, man, up in Canada. Just been brutal. But this weekend, got to head across the pond to Slam Dunk Festival in the UK. Wow. What a lineup, and so many great pals, so many hangs. Man, just all the people that I saw, a lot of them previous guests of the show. Shout out to Dan from Story of the Year. Shout out to John from Trophy Eyes. Shout out to Liam from the Cancer Bats. Shout out to Pierre from Simple Plan. Shout out to Ryan from Seaway. Man, it goes on and on. It was just such a good time. What an awesome weekend. I'm sure some of you were there. I mean, the weather wasn't perfect, but the lineup was perfect. The bands were perfect. I saw some absolutely incredible, incredible performances. Had a blast at the Emo Night UK as well. I met a few sinners there. And speaking of Emo Night, well, I have you. If you happen to live in Charlotte, North Carolina, I will be there this Saturday DJing at the Fillmore. And my homie Craig Owens will be there as well. It's going to be a good time. So if you happen to be in Charlotte, North Carolina, come hang out this Saturday at the Fillmore for Emo Night. We'll be DJing. It'll be a good time. I love hanging out at these things. It's just fun, man. It's just no pressure. Show up, play some tunes, have a couple drinks. Oh, and in addition, big news from my band Silverstein today. We are doing a 20th anniversary tour in Europe. That's right. This February, we are playing in the UK and Germany. We're doing 3 sets, if you can believe it. A greatest hit set, our album Discovering the Waterfront in its entirety, and also an acoustic little suite as well. So that'll be awesome. I'm going to be in Berlin on my birthday. I'm excited. Tickets for that go on sale, I think, May 31st. So, you know, go online. You'll find them. We're also bringing along our very good friends in Hawthorne Heights once again. So it's a good time. So if you're in Germany or the UK, make sure you check that out as well. If you're not, well, stay tuned. There's going to be some more things announced. But this summer, we'll be in the US and Canada with August Burns Red. Tickets also available for that right away now. Lots of business to catch up on, I guess, huh? Lots of business. As always, if you want to get in touch with me, feel free to hit me up, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all of my emails. I try to get back to everybody. I'm not the best, but there's a pretty good chance that I will get back to you. So check that out. Follow me on social media. Follow the show on social media. If you want to support the show, there's a couple ways you can do that. The best way is to join the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club for as little as $6 a month. Just $6 a month. What is that? Like one really nice coffee in a month? Okay? You get access to an amazing community, 300 plus strong of like-minded individuals like yourself. We talk about music. We talk about sports. Go Raptors. Movies, television, Game of Thrones. I don't know. Whatever you want. We have a great community. Plus, of course, access to bonus episodes. I've talked to everyone from Jared Alonji to Ace Frehley. And it's the only way to get merchandise, patches shipped to your house every 3 months. It's a good time. Check it out. The link, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Welcome new members. Stoked for the next Sinnerfest. We can all hang out again. But hey, if $6 is too rich for your blood, and I get it, you got expenses, you got shit going on. I know life is not cheap. It's okay. Don't worry. This podcast will always be free. So all I ask is you spread the word, tell a friend, tell a loved one. Let's keep this thing going. Let's keep this thing growing. Let's get these numbers up. All right, let's do it. Go back, listen to some old episodes. Ben from Armor for Sleep last week, what a great episode that was. I absolutely loved it. So yes, help me spread the word. And maybe we can be the music equivalent of the Joe Rogan show one day or something. I don't know. You know what's funny? I never listened to the Joe Rogan podcast until the other day. Listen to it. Pretty good. Pretty good. I enjoyed it. So yeah, there's a reason it's so popular, I guess. Pretty good. Anyway, enough rambling. Let's get on to this week's episode and my conversation with Marcus Bridge of Northlane. We suffer.
Shane, how are you?
Hey, Marcus, I'm great, man. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad at all. Just waking up and getting ready.
I know, right? It's morning for you, and for me, it's like nighttime.
Yeah, what time is it over there?
It's 9 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, it's true.
So, yeah, and it's cool, because I never do these things at night, like ever.
It must be like a bit more, I always find like, I've been awake for a moment now, so it's all right, but like when I do stuff in the morning, I'm a bit, you know, got to get in the moment, kind of got to get used to talking. Do you find it's probably a bit easy to do it at night?
Oh, totally.
You're a bit more awake.
For me, like, you know, I'm usually the one, like, I'm the one, like, you know, I got to get up, I got to set up my shit, and usually, like, I'll go over, like, a couple notes before I talk to somebody. So usually, like, I'm in the, you know, I'm kind of, like, ready to go, but oftentimes, and this happens, like, fairly often, I'll call somebody and it's like pretty obvious that they forgot and I just woke them up. And when that happens, it's always like, all right, man, do you want me to call you back in like 10 minutes? Because I don't know what's with people. Like, people always lie about that. And I'm guilty of it too. You know?
Yeah, like, I've definitely done it before as well.
Like, you pick up the phone and someone's like, oh, did I wake you up? And you're like, no, you didn't wake me up. I've been up.
It's
like,
no, I just got out of the shower.
It's okay, you know? Like, it's okay. Everyone sleeps, you know? It's okay.
It's just that professional front you're trying to keep up. It's like, yeah, I'm a pro.
But I even do it, though, like, if I'm, you know, watching a movie with my girlfriend or something, and, like, you know, I'll be like, I'll fall asleep during it. She'll be like, are you sleeping? I'm like, no, I'm not sleeping. Like, what is up with that? I always lie. I don't know.
My girlfriend does that too, and it kills me. So I'm just like, just tell me you're asleep.
No.
I'd rather just know.
I know. I'm the worst. But hey, well, dude, thank you for taking the time all the way across the world. You sound great, by the way. It's amazing, thanks. Right? Just that we can be literally on other sides of the planet and just talk like this.
Just have a chat. It's insane. Cool. It was really funny as well because, like, Josh, our guitarist, he kind of filled me and we had this today. But I didn't know who it was with.
Really?
It's like, so who's this with? It's like, it's with Shane. And I'm like, wait, what? You're not going to warn me that I'm actually going to have to talk?
Oh, sorry. I don't know. It's always funny how I set these things up too. Like, once in a while, it's just like, I'll just hit somebody up over, you know, like a DM or just, I don't know, I just text them or whatever, somebody I know. And other times, like, you go through the whole, like, with the publicist and this is the time. Yeah. And there's like, and sometimes I'll get somebody on the phone and they'll have like no idea what anything is. And they're like, oh, you're the guy from Silverstein? Oh, crazy. And yeah. Like, hi. It's okay though. But regardless, dude, we are here. And, you know, we're here to talk about all kinds of stuff, man. But first, let's start off with how are things going down under? What is it now? What do you call this? This is fall for you?
Fall. It's like just autumn.
Autumn, yes. Yes, you say autumn.
Yes.
So how are things going right now?
Yeah, it's good. We're at the moment, we're all at home, just, I guess, G-ing up, getting ready to... take the new album out. So yeah, just kind of enjoying some time at home while we can. Which is good. I've just been, me and my girlfriend just got a new dog. So pretty much that's taken up my whole time.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. So the new record, just to be clear, is completed, 100% done.
It's Dunsky's
and
out
it
in
comes
August.
Out August 2nd. It's called Alien.
That's the one.
And I want to talk all about that, but I love, I want to go back and talk about some of the earlier stuff. And
cool.
Speaking of Alien, I guess this is a terrible segue, but I'll use it anyway. Is that how you felt when you joined the band?
Oh, absolutely. It was one of the, it was, yeah, it was completely foreign to me, to be honest. Like I had listened to Northlane before and like I was a big fan of Northlane, obviously. And like I'd grown up listening to heavy music and all of that, but I was, I always grew up an emo kid. Like I was, I don't know, like, you know, Fall Out Boy and Panic at the Disco were like my favorite kind of bands when I was growing up. And
right.
Coming from that kind of background, like the last band I played in prior to Northlane as well was that kind of style as well. So coming from that background and going to a band that's already well established and has a much more aggressive sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was absolutely terrifying. It wasn't even something I initially considered like doing, like trying out for Northlane, because I was just like, this, I don't think this is in my wheelhouse really.
Yeah. Well, it probably wasn't even at the time. To be fair.
Absolutely. Like I hadn't really been, I'd never really screamed in a band prior to that. Like I'd never screamed as the main thing in a band before that. And then to go do that 25 days in a row and like it was just something that was so daunting to me and just like I just had no idea how it was going to go. And on top of that, like Northlane's fans are very very passionate, we'll say.
That's a nice so way to put it. Sure.
Yeah, with the with that change they were very very vocal about how they felt about me.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because it's amazing, you know. Well, it's, you've been in the band for actually about 5 years now, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But it's amazing, you know, how these things don't go away. Like with very minimal clicking, I can find the post of when you were announced and I can still read those comments of what people say comparing you to Adrian and all, you know, all that is right there.
Dude,
if I can
get,
read
like,
it, you can certainly read it. You know,
I still get comments. So I get a notification every now and then on my YouTube from just like a comment on my audition video from 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Being like, they're still saying they should have got someone else. So it's pretty it's pretty funny.
Yeah, like two top three records you know, has happened since. Like a number, literally a number one album. I think they made the right choice.
It's just, I don't know. It's people don't really care about that though. They see it as, there's a very weird like metal, hierarchy, I think, amongst fans that like if you're doing something, it's just not right. Even if it's successful, it's still not right.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, we've only been talking for a few minutes, but it seems like you have the right personality, or at least you've acquired, you know, the right personality to let this kind of wash off your back a little bit. You know what I mean? And not let it affect you.
From time to time, it does, you know, it's, the thing that is does kind of bother you is, you know, when it's consistent and it's like, well, wow, I've been working really hard for 5 years and it's not changed. But then you got to look at it and see the improvements that have, I guess, come from it. Like we've definitely seen a lot of new people come on board, and I guess those people are more passionate than any of those other people would have ever been. So it's we're able to see like a shift nowadays, which is really good.
Oh yeah, I noticed the shift too. I mean, just listening to your records as they've progressed, you know, on. But yeah, it's. I think that having that personality is so important though, because you never got discouraged, you know. And I watched your audition video; I'd never seen it before, and it was clear to me watching it, screaming wasn't exactly something natural for you. I mean, you were doing your best, and you sounded okay, and you know, you weren't. You know, like everyone knows, well, not everyone knows maybe, but when you're in the studio and people put compression on a scream, or they double them, or a little bit of overdrive. Like, that stuff all makes it sound better on the record, which, you know, you weren't doing in your audition video. But, you know, it was clear to me that you were great, great singer, but you weren't there. And if you'd let those comments and everything, like, totally just knock you down and discourage you, you would have never been the singer that you are today.
Definitely. Like, I completely agree. I think it could have gone one of two ways, which is, let that kind of get to me and Northlane maybe survived one more album.
Right.
We end up where we are now and kind of, for me, I always kind of looked at it as, well, I'm just trying to do the best that I can and do what the rest of the guys are happy with. If they're happy and I'm happy with what we're doing and we're proud of it, then
totally,
that's all that really matters. And people are going to come on board. Because if five people enjoy it, there's going to be other people around the world who enjoy it. Like, there's not those people who are talking whatever they're talking, they're not the overwhelming majority. So,
yeah. No, absolutely not.
It's good to be positive.
I think you got to give some credit probably to your bandmates too, because, and I love your story. I think it's so interesting. And I really wanted to talk to you because maybe we should talk about how you got in the band, just so everyone knows. You literally made an audition video. You sent it to them. They had, I read 2,000 people applied. I don't know if that's an exaggeration, but that seems insane.
Yeah, I think it was close. Yeah.
That's insane to me. And they picked you. Are you from Sydney too?
Yeah. So I live in Melbourne now, but originally from Sydney as well.
So at least you were in, you know, it wasn't like you had to move across the country too far or anything like that to join the band, but they picked a guy that literally you'd never been in any like, you know, bands before that had been signed or touring or anything. Mm-hmm. And you weren't really comfortable screaming and you'd never even been overseas, traveled outside of Australia.
Yeah.
And They're a band that they'd put out records, they'd done tours all over the place. So I mean, you got to give them a lot of credit, I think, for making you feel comfortable. At least I assume that they must have really tried to take you under their wing and make you feel good about what you were doing.
Definitely, man.
It's a hard dynamic.
Yeah, from day one. Like, I guess they knew, I guess, the stakes as well, and they knew what could happen if this didn't go right. But they also just knew that they knew this was going to be a hard time for me. Like, they knew that there was going to be backlash. They knew that it was going to be, there's going to be a lot of noise around me joining an Adrian leaving. So it was really, they were very supportive of that. And they always just let me kind of, move at my own pace as long as it was, you know, keeping up still.
Right.
And it was really, in the end, like, we had about 3 months to prep for the first tour I did with them. And they were just, they were so encouraging. And, like, I was second-guessing myself the whole time.
Sure.
And the whole time, every time we'd rehearse or do whatever, they'd be so supportive. They'd be like, yeah, dude, your scream's already improving. Like, you're already... Yeah, and it was definitely a big risk. There are a lot of other vocalists who, you know, might have been more suited to the sound Northlane has kind of been expected to have over the years, who auditioned as well. Like, there was a bunch of really good vocalists, and they definitely took a big risk on me. But
they were just, which
I'm really, really very lucky for.
Absolutely. I mean, the other thing too is, you know, and I don't want to go on and on about this for like an hour, but you know, picking you, a guy that doesn't have any experience, it's like, what if you get out on the road and you're in Germany or you're in, I don't know, some foreign country somewhere and you're just like, yeah, I miss Australia. I want to go home. This isn't for me. Like, you know what I mean? And then what?
Absolutely.
Like, because, you know, that's they're seasoned, you know, musical veterans that obviously they're in this and they want to do this. They've been doing it. And you're not. And you were at the age, like, what were you, 23 when you joined?
Something like that. 23.
Yeah. So you're at the age where, like, you're not, I don't know, you're kind of finding that place where it's like, okay, not that, like, you can't become a successful musician past age 23, many people have done it, and it's possible, but there comes a point where it's like, okay, maybe I gotta get a job, maybe I gotta, like, I got bills to pay, like, maybe I can't do this, you know, full time. Was that starting to creep into your mind at that time that you did that too?
Well, yes and no. So what was happening around that time is that, yeah, I was playing in another band that was a bit more pop rock, a bit more straightforward and kind of emo, I guess, but whatever. But anyways, at the start of the year that I joined Northlane, the guys in that band wanted to call it a day for similar reasons. They were getting older. They've been playing in local bands for like 10 years or something and had still not quite made it to where they'd wanted to be, I guess. Which is totally understandable, but I was so bummed. And for me, music's always been, it's been the one and only thing, I guess. It's the only thing that I've ever been really, really passionate about and really any good at, I think.
Right.
And for me, touring was always something that, traveling was always something that I wanted to do, but I wasn't going to do until I was touring. Like, my idea of traveling was going on tour from when I was a kid. So I was just like, I'm not going to, you know, those people at school who, you know, want to go travel Europe or go travel South America or whatever. And that was never on the cards for me until I was touring.
Yeah.
Because that's all I wanted to do. I didn't really care about going and seeing the places. I just wanted to go play music in those places. So for me, doing all this stuff was kind of the only way for me. So once that band had fallen apart, I just dove deep into like writing and doing lots of like session work and cover stuff as well. And
right.
Just as much stuff as I could do to still just be playing music. And I think what came with that was Northlane saw that despite not currently being in a band, I was still actively trying to pursue music, which I think, yeah, would have been a big factor because, it's something that I can't not do.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have a new album and you've released a new song and it's called Bloodline. Mm-hmm. And I read that it's based on, and this is what Wikipedia says, your violent upbringing.
Yes.
Now
it's vaguest form.
Okay. Okay. Now can we talk about that? Can we talk about the early days of your life in as much depth as you're comfortable? I guess growing up wasn't easy for you. You said you grew up around kind of the Sydney area, but talk to me about that and how, you know, the first, before you joined Northlane, there's 23 years there. So yeah, talk to me about that if you don't mind. And obviously it's still something that's, you know, factoring into your music.
Yeah. Well, how long have you got? It's a long story.
Dude, this is why I love podcasts, because we don't have a limit, you know, like this doesn't have to get transcribed forever into a magazine and because otherwise it would take up the entire magazine. You know what I mean? So we can chat and you can go on and on and on. So the floor is yours. Absolutely. My friend.
All right. Well, where do I start?
What day were you born? How much did you weigh? What hospital were you born in? Go ahead, man. Start at the beginning. It's all good.
Shit. I actually don't know any of that stuff. I was born on the 19th of July. That's all I know. Okay. I don't know the time or weight or any of that.
So but that's a summer baby for us and a winter baby for you.
That's the one. I'm a Cancerian, a big baby. But anyways, so yeah, I don't know really where to start. So for me, like I grew up with both my parents, but from a very early age, like I wouldn't really know exactly when or if it was before I was born, but yeah, from an early age, my parents were both like, yeah, heavy drug users. Like both my parents at some point were using heroin, and from as early as I can remember, like from at least three or four that was going on around me and my sister. And from that also came, a lot of violence from my father. I think he kind of had other issues besides that as well, just like that on top of, I think he just had severe, stress and anxiety that caused him to be violent, which doing these things, yeah, definitely wouldn't help him improve on that at all.
Right. Is your sister older or younger? Older?
My sister's a year younger than me.
You're younger, okay.
Yeah. I don't really know where to go from here.
Well, I mean...
What would you like to...
Well, I mean, how did that work out then? I mean, you were going to school, your parents were there, but I guess they had some issues, like, and you recognized it very early. Were there other family members kind of helping you out, or were you and your sister fending for yourself?
It depended at the time. Like, at times, we were scattered. We were going from place to place all the time. Like, we would either... Like when we were younger, we'd be going from hotel to hotel so that my parents could score, or that even as we got older, we'd still be doing the same thing, but it was because my dad had like a gambling problem as well. So he'd be in a hotel just down the street from the casino just so that he could go and gamble all night. So we spent a lot of time in and around the city and around like King's Cross, which at the time was also quite a sketchy area. But we did have our grandparents who did keep an eye on us when they could. Obviously, whenever we were off with our parents, like, they couldn't really do too much about it. But whenever anything went wrong, my grandma especially was always there to help us out, I guess. But yeah, I think up until I was 15 or 16, it was like this until like my parents kind of started trying to figure their stuff out. My mom still really hasn't. Mm. And like my dad did eventually end up dying from an overdose.
Sorry to hear that.
It's all right. It's in the past. And in the end, I've kind of taken it as... Like, yeah, he definitely struggled with those kind of issues most of his life. And
yeah,
in some way, I feel like he would be at peace now. As grim as it is, it's just I don't think that he would have ever escaped that.
Right.
Kind of, those demons. But yeah, I don't know. There's so much more in between all of this that I just, yeah, for me, telling these stories is, it's not so much difficult in the sense of, like, I find it hard to talk about, and it's more just difficult in piecing it all together.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know what kind of violence, if it was like abuse, if you were being hit all the time, if it was you were being, neglected. But obviously, like, that can lead to, and I don't know if you've had therapy or whatever, but it can lead to, repressed memories, and it can lead to, things, there being missing spots in what you can remember and what's accurate and stuff.
Definitely.
So I'm sure that's a factor too.
Yeah, I think what kind of came along with all. I think I might be completely wrong, but I've kind of linked, as I've gotten older, tried to link a lot of things together and see if any of it makes sense. Like, and to me, I've always felt that what kind of caused my dad to be violent. So yeah, he'd hit us, and there's a few random, like, he'd hit us over nothing, I guess. Like, so there was an occasion once I remember that, I think, the book club, like Scholastic Book Club?
Yeah.
We had that, and I think I got given $10 to get something for that, and then I think it was meant to have come home or whatever, and it never came home because I ended up spending the $10 on something at the canteen or something.
Right.
Some pretty petty whatever stuff. Then my dad found out about it and, like, hit me in the back of the head and had this watch on. and then like sliced the back of my head open with the watch. And it was just like kind of, I can only imagine that this is this short fuse stuff of him not either being able to score or not being, or like losing everything at the casino or doing something that's just kind of put him at the end of his fuse. So as soon as one of us does something that he doesn't like, he kind of takes it out on us. And like, once again, this is all just, this is all just post analysis, but.
I think that that's accurate. And of course that doesn't excuse it at all.
Oh, absolutely not.
And it's, you know, that's, you can't just go around hitting people, especially your children. So yeah, it's definitely, I think it's, I don't know. I mean, have you had, I mean, this seems like, I mean, you seem like you've got your shit together. You seem like, you know, you've come out of this okay. I mean, I know you've talked a little bit about it in interviews, some mental health issues, but for the most part, it seems like you've kind of come to terms with this and you're okay.
Yeah, I think I've had my ups and downs, and that, I think I had my ups and downs before I was in North Lane.
Right.
So that would have been something that I was able to kind of deal with not long after, or not long after, it's still taking time, but I, like at the time that was obviously when my father passed away, that was definitely the hardest thing I'd ever had to deal with. I was the one who actually found him in his bathroom. Mm. So
how old were you?
That was
when that happened.
I was 18.
Yeah.
Just about to finish high school. At the time, it was only me and my dad in the house at the time, actually. And it's just, it's crazy. I just remember that whole, like the night before, vividly as well. Because I don't know. Sorry, now I'm just off on a tangent now.
No, it's okay.
I forgot what I was talking about.
Yeah, no. So you lived with your mom and your dad and your sister throughout, like until you were, you know, your dad died, or you say your mom maybe wasn't there at that point.
So I lived with my mom and dad and my sister up until maybe, I think up until I was 16. It was up until I was 18, and my sister ended up moving out because she couldn't be around my dad anymore. And then there was a point on my 18th birthday, actually, where my mom left as well because she couldn't deal with my dad anymore. So after that, they'd both left. And then it was like all right for a little while, like not all right, but like my dad had stopped trying to use and started trying to look at kind of doing a normal job. But then he met this girl who was, just a junkie from a mile away. And that's when it all, kind of came to an end. It was
right.
Yeah,
man, that's crazy. Well, I mean, at this point, you're obviously like you're listening to music. Are you going to shows? Are you playing in bands? Are you playing instruments? Like, I just picture, you know, you kind of being in this terrible environment and using music as kind of an escape. Is that accurate?
Yeah, exactly. That was, like I've said, that's all I've ever been able to do and all I've ever been passionate about. And whenever that was happening, I would, just be locked in my room playing my guitar, trying to write songs, or I'd be watching audio production videos or something like that. I'd be just trying to do as much as I can to, just increase my knowledge in what I do. And then in the end, that was all to get to that point of being able to tour and get out and see the world like I always wanted to.
Absolutely, man. That's absolutely, absolutely wild. And thank you for sharing, all that. Did you end up going to like some kind of uni or something like that?
I did go to a music uni called AIM in Sydney for a little bit, but I was there for music performance, and then after a trimester, I was just kind of like, well, I kind of already know how to do this.
Right.
I don't really need it. I don't need the degree to tell someone I can play music. So.
Right.
Unless I wanted to teach, but
yeah. No, I've heard that a lot, you know, from people like that. They show up to, you know, audio engineering school or something. And then on the first day, the teacher's like, yeah, just like go take the money you're going to spend and just like buy some really good gear, you know?
Yeah.
So which is always kind of interesting, but it's true. Like people ask all the time, you know, oh, how do you get into, you know, how do you get into music? How do you do this? It's like, you just do it, you know?
Exactly.
You just do it. And yeah, these days it's very easy with what you can find out on YouTube and stuff too. It's like mind blowing.
You can do anything these days. I can make a full orchestra now on my computer. That's insane.
Yeah, you can. And it sounds real.
I was actually losing it the other... I actually called a friend of mine the other day about something like this. You know, do you know the program, the VST Isotope Ozone? It's like a mastering plugin.
Yeah.
I only just got like the most recent version of that recently, and it has like an auto mastering thing where it like listens to the song and then gives you the... I was blown away.
Oh, I know.
I'd never seen anything like it.
I know. Well, they have that, was it called Lander? Are you familiar with that? Where like you, it's like a website and you just like upload your song and then, like 10 minutes later they send it back to you and it's mastered. And you can choose like how loud you want it, and then it kind of figures out the rest. And it's not bad, dude. Like I think, and I don't want to shit talk any mastering engineers that has mastered my band, but I think it might be better than some of our mastering on our records. Like, seriously.
Oh, man. It's so interesting, man. Like, you can do so much.
I know.
Just by the click of the button.
I know. It's insane. I wouldn't be surprised if that Isotope plugin is kind of similar to what Lander, or what like one of those things uses, like whatever kind of algorithms they, you know, figure out or whatever.
Absolutely. But, yeah, it would definitely be very similar.
But no, it's absolutely crazy, man. So, wow, this is nuts. So, damn. So I guess like, do you still have contact with your mother or your sister or your grandparents or anything? Or is it like, cause I mean, you know, you've become this like successful musician, very successful. Like, you know, your first album with Northlane went to number one on the Australian charts. Ooh. And you know, the one after that went to number three, and you got a new one coming out that could go number one. I mean, you know, all of a sudden, like overnight, you're kind of this big deal. And I always think it's interesting when, whether it's like Justin Bieber's father, like coming back into the fold after years, after like abandoning him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's like those kinds of people come back, and it's like always kind of a weird, I think it's a weird dynamic, you know, that way. I mean, I can't speak for your relationship, but with your family, but it's just something I guess I'm going to ask you.
Oh, no, of course. Well, so my grandparents, I'm still close with them. And as same with my sister, my sister kind of had some kind of a bit of a rocky couple of months a little while back as well. And looked to be going down a very similar path to the rest of my family, but she's doing a lot better now. But my mom, I have not really talked to much. For me, like, so my mom's still got a lot of problems. Like, she's struggled with, like, alcoholism and has kind of gone on and off. And every now and then she's messaged me when she said she's, you know, stopped drinking and is doing a lot better and whatever. Right. But then I'll hear from my sister that, yeah, that's not the case.
Right.
And it's just at this point, like I'm kind of torn because she's gone to hospital quite a lot recently, but due to her drinking so much, but she won't kind of stop.
Yeah. Well,
and for me, like, I've just not wanted to, like, something that's been really important for me, I guess, moving forward past all of this stuff is not getting dragged back into that world again.
Yeah.
And not feeling like I'm trapped like in that kind of environment again. And I just always, like, I can't really bring myself to have a relationship with my mom until I can really see that she's tried to not be like that. And she has kind of reached out in the past, but I've just known that it's going to get back to that point, and it has. So that's kind of where I am with my mom, just because it's, yeah, it's I'm in a tough position because I don't really want to, like, not, I don't want to not speak to her and then something happen and then me regret that for the rest of my life. But I also then need to still think about myself in this moment.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense, man. And I think the fact that you're aware of that is a really good thing too. You know, with your parents, you know, having drug problems and, you know, sometimes these things can be hereditary. Is that something that you've, you know, kept your distance from in your life, like in terms of drugs and alcohol, or have you gone down that road at all?
Well, definitely, like, the harder shit. Like, I could never go near, like, heroin or meth or
right.
anything like that. No matter what, there's not this thing in my head that I could just never bring myself to do that, just because of what I've seen it do.
Yeah.
To my family and, you know, some friends as well. Like, it's not mm-hmm. anything I would ever, I don't know. I don't think I could ever get that low that I'd get to that point that I'd want to do that. But yeah, that being said, I'm not someone who's going to, like, point the finger at every single person who is doing something like that or whatever. Right. Like, in the end, everyone does their stuff for a reason or for what they think might be a good reason. And that's only really a reason to reach out to them, I guess, not kind of shun them if you can. But if they're not willing to change, then it's not really worth your time.
No. Oh, well, Marcus, you have a good head on your shoulders, dude. I like this. This is good, man. And I think it's an uplifting story, and I think it's important.
Yeah,
I try
to keep positive through it all.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good message to, you know, people listening. And it doesn't matter, you know, whether it's somebody, like, if it's a 16-year-old listening to this or a 36-year-old listening to this, like, all this stuff and this trauma that you faced and the fact that you've overcome it and that you're open about it, I think is a really, really great message, you know, to just pass on to people.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing all that, man.
Absolutely. Well, that's the main thing I really wanted to take away do with the new album. It was kind of, speak about this stuff in a very open and straightforward way that people who have gone through similar stuff can relate to it, but then also not feel like I don't feel like I've really heard much music that touches very specifically on these kind of things. Like, there's songs that do kind of have the broad message of, you know, drug use and domestic abuse and stuff, but not those direct,
right?
Like, moments that if you've been in that moment, you know that feeling, or you know, like, the anger or the behavior that your parents or whatever are showing you. And, like, for me, this album isn't even... it's not positive in the sense there's a message at the end of it that's like, yeah, everything's going to be all right. In the end, the whole album's pretty dark overall, but
mm-hmm.
I think that, yeah, the light at the end of the tunnel is the fact that I'm still here and able to tell this story and then hopefully show people that you can make it out the other end.
Well, yeah, of course. And you know, you're not going to get anywhere singing about rainbows and ponies and, you know what I mean? Like, no one's going to pay attention to that, you know?
Yeah,
and it's the darkness that's going to draw people in, but then it's also, that's going to be, you know, what people are going to start having the self-realization. You know, I'm just looking at the lyrics right here for your song Bloodline, and you're right. I mean, it's very obvious. Well, I mean, after talking to you now for half an hour, but, you know, like, there's a line like hotel homes in the cross, which I guess means that you lived in hotel rooms in King's Cross. Mm-hmm. You know, I was raised in hell. I made it out myself. I was raised to bleed, you know, bad blood runs wild and free. These kind of lines, they are very direct, you know, into this life that you've led. Are these pretty typical, sorts of lyrics for the album?
Yes, I think there's a kind of mix of different songs. Like, I guess Bloodline and there's another two or three songs that are very straight to the point. There's a few other ones that maybe are a bit more metaphorical, but in the end, it's all super personal and touches on some kind of direct from real life moments that I wanted to, I guess, touch on. But it's interesting because already I've seen there's three types of people who have listened to the song. There's people who've gone through it. There's people who haven't, but I guess they're gaining like an understanding of that kind of thing. Or there's the people that can't fathom it at all and don't understand, which is fine. But I hope then with the rest of the album that there is a bit more of an understanding on their part. Because I guess with one song, you might not really be able to.
Oh, it's so hard, man. Like, it's so hard. You know, even with Silverstein, we wrote and recorded the single. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but I am. And and you know how difficult that is when it's like, okay, well, we got this one song. Here you go. I don't know. And obviously, like, you can't do everything you want to do in an album in a song to show people. So then people are going to draw conclusions about what one song means for a whole album, musically, lyrically, everything. And it's just the worst.
Yeah.
It's just the worst.
It's like, everyone says it. You know, there's no one song that's the same on this album. And Bloodline, I also hate this term, but Bloodline's probably the most, in inverted commas, radio rock song on the album, which it's not really even that, like, in the end, but...
No, there's quite a bit of screaming on it, so...
Yeah.
I know Australia's a little, like, you guys are a lot more liberal with the... use of screaming on the radio, like when like Amity Affliction is like however many number one records in a row, you know, and Parkway and all that, like those bands Parkway doesn't even have singing. Well, they do now kind of, but you know, for years they didn't even have singing. So like, you know, and for those bands to have mainstream attention in Australia is actually, I think it's pretty fucking sick. So
it's mental, man.
Yeah. So,
and those guys definitely paved the way.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. I Killed the Prom Queen is another band that like was right there. I mean, they never got there, but they were about to get there, I think.
That's definitely still Aussie like cult legends.
Oh yeah. Oh fuck
for
yeah.
sure.
Fuck yeah. I love those guys, man. Well, dude. So what else? With writing this record, and this is the third record you've done with Northlane. I imagine the first record was probably just like overwhelming, and probably the rest of the guys were holding your hand through the whole thing. I'm sure, just because, you know, it's that kind of an environment. I bet the second one was a little better, but I feel like this is probably really the time for you to shine. Did you feel like now you were really in your element and you felt like you could kind of be yourself the most now?
Yeah, 100%. I think... both, I guess, having the time that I've had with Northlane so far, and then also, yeah, I don't know, opening up about these kind of things. Like, I'd never felt comfortable to do that, especially with... it's the dog's barking.
That's okay.
Yeah, I never felt comfortable talking about, I guess, yeah, any of this kind of stuff before. One, because I'd never really done that, and two, because it was very different for what Northlane had done before.
Right.
So for those first two albums, I just wanted to, I guess, get a feel for everything. Yeah, put my own kind of voice into our music, but not be overbearing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that's something that could, if I came along and changed everything, did everything completely different, that's another way that Northlane could have very well completely fallen apart.
Yeah,
just because it would have been such a huge change, but now we've had this time to, I guess, gel and grow
and progress. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and I guess all the other guys also have like a better understanding of my story as well now that I've gotten to know them better as well over the years. So
absolutely,
having done this now is definitely the right time, and we did. So the last time we did was with David Bendith.
Yeah.
For me, he was actually a huge
I don't know, he gave me a huge push to, I guess, write this kind of stuff, this more personal stuff, which, yeah, I don't think if we didn't do that last album with him, I don't know if this would have turned out like it did.
Interesting. Yeah, David Bendith gets talked about on this show from time to time. I mean, he's obviously like a legendary producer. He's done, I mean, amazing, amazing work with, you know, like people know him from Paramore and so much other stuff. He's also got a very, very like intense personality.
Yeah.
but you liked working with him, but you didn't do the new record with him.
No, we wanted to, I guess, take everything we'd learned over these last 5 years and I guess for the other guys over the last 10 years and try and,
yeah.
I don't know, just back ourselves. I think with me joining, there might have been a bit of a fear that of how everything would go. So we kind of, you know, we got some help from some people we trust. And in the end, we're so happy with how it all turned out. But we just thought it was time for us to just do us and I guess try and keep it to the five voices as opposed to another four on top of it.
So you didn't, who produced the new album then?
We did.
So you did it all yourself?
Yeah. So
wow.
We produced ourselves and then we did the instrumentals with Chris Blancato in Sydney. He's a friend of ours who actually did, he recorded Hollow Existence, Northlane's first EP, quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we did vocals with a guy named Dave Petrovic who did vocals for Discoveries as well, actually, and
okay.
Recorded one of my first band's EPs.
Cool.
So it's just like, it was a cool way to, I guess, bring back all of this history of Northlane into this album, as well as kind of bring this new confidence in our own writing.
Yeah. I absolutely love that. That's a great approach. And I think that makes sense too. I think, you know, when you are a newer band and a younger band, you do kind of need a producer there to sort of help. I mean, not just steer the ship of music and ideas, but steer the ship of personalities too. And, you know, a lot of times when you're a younger band, not just younger in terms of how long you've been together, but you're younger people, you're maybe not as confident. Maybe you're not as good at navigating each other's, you know, sort of sensitivities and personalities. But once you've made, you know, records together and, you know, you're in your 30s or getting there, I think you start to have that confidence. Like, okay, we can do this. You know, we don't really need someone holding our hand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess if at the end of the day it doesn't work out, then we knew we did the wrong thing.
David Bendith still got him on speed dial? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's great, man.
Oh, man.
Well, what else to tell the people before I let you go? I mean, you got a bunch of shows coming up kind of all over the world. I see Japan. There's some U.S. dates, I think. Australia, of course.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff coming up. We're super excited to get back to the States. We haven't been there since, I think, 2015 or something.
Oh, my
God,
really?
It's been a while. Yeah.
Wow.
We did it quite a lot when I first joined. I think we did it three times within the first, like, year and a half of me joining, which I think might have been a mistake.
I think we
overdid it, and coming back, people weren't as keen. So we wanted to leave it a little bit of time to...
Yeah.
You know, build it up again, and it's cool because now I'm excited to get back as well. Like after that last couple of shows we did there, I was just like, oh man, I was loving this so much, and now I'm kind of bummed.
Well, I mean,
now we get to come back reinvigorated,
right? Well, the problem with touring the U.S. too is, you know, depending on what time of year you're there, you know, there can be like literally 10 other tours going on the same month or, you know, or whatever. And like,
absolutely,
that can be really difficult when there's a bunch of stacked bills you're up against. And like, you know, you're in a city that's really like not that big, you know, like if you're in New York or LA, like there's so many people and there's so much shit going on. Like it's not that big a deal. But if you're in like, let's pick a city, I'll just say Detroit, and there's three other shows that same night,
That's tough, man. So
absolutely,
you know, and I don't know if that happens elsewhere as much as it happens in the U.S. I feel like the U.S. it happens all the time.
Yeah, I can imagine everywhere else being a bit more spread out, or like it's like Europe would have shows way more spread out, or Australia would only have that one show.
Yeah, I
or
think
or two maybe.
I kind of think so. Exactly. Yeah. So I could see it being tough, but I wouldn't get down on yourself. I think it's going to be great. And
especially with the
last, you know, couple of records you've done being, I think people really enjoying them. So
yeah, I'm very excited, and I think this album, I think we'll do pretty well for the US. I think what we've done in the past has been a bit, I don't know, a bit kind of left field for what maybe they're used to of North Lane. And maybe now that we've been able to build that new version of North Lane into what it is now, that those people have come on board, and we'll enjoy it for what it is.
Absolutely, man. Well, awesome, dude. Well, hopefully I can come see you guys if you roll through my hood.
That would be great.
So anything else to tell the people before I let you go? I'm going to play your new song, Bloodline. And
Not too much I can think of. Yeah, I guess the Alien is out August 2nd, and we'll be hitting the States mid-August. So grab your ticks.
All right.
We'll also just be around the world for the rest of the year. So
I love it.
Suss it out.
Well, Marcus, enjoy your morning, and thanks for the time, dude.
Thanks a lot, Sam. Have a good one.
Cheers.
So there it is with Marcus. I want to thank him so much for taking the time, for coming on the show, and for really pouring his heart out and really putting it all out there, talking about his upbringing and his family and everything. That can't be easy, but I really do find that inspiring, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that listen to this show that have similar experiences, and I think that really just him telling it like it is an amazing thing. So Marcus, I love you, brother. Thank you for that. And oh my God, this new North Lane song is awesome. I'm going to play it in just a couple seconds. But I do want to remind you to make sure you're subscribed. We got a big episode next week. Ryan Key from Yellow Card will be on the show. A guy I've been trying to lock down for literally years. And we chatted. It was a good one. So yes, hit the subscribe button. Make sure you're not going to miss this one. And if you like the podcast, go on iTunes, write a review, preferably 5 stars. Check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club and all that good stuff. Thank you so, so, so much for listening. And another reminder to check out all the shit that Silverstein's doing. So much coming up. It's very exciting. It's very exciting stuff. I will leave you with a tune. Here's the song we talked about. Very personal stuff from Marcus. Here is Bloodline on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.